season one, episode six. I want to start out with a breath because I know I probably spend my whole day hyperventilating a little bit, just if you stop and take a breath, it'll make everything better. So let's just take a quick breath. I'm trying to make this not that cringy. It's not cringy. Let's just take a deep breath, hold it for whatever amount of seconds we want, and then we'll exhale it for whatever seconds we want. Okay, ready? All together now. I mean, just like that, you get a whole different outlook on life. And I think that your breath is the key to a lot of things. So one of the topics today is meditation. And I'm going to start out with a quote. We have everything we need. There is no need for self-improvement. All these trips that we lay on ourselves, the heavy duty fearing that we're bad and hoping that we're good, the identities that we so dearly cling to, the rage, the jealousy, and addictions never touch our basic wealth. They are like clouds that temporarily block the sun, but all the time our warmth and brilliance are right here. This is who we really are. We are one blink of an eye away from being fully awake. Pema Chodron. When I started learning about meditation, it was actually from an Audible book by Pema Chodron. I don't remember exactly which one it was. If you want to know, let me know. It was very short, but it was just like the absolute basics of meditation. And it's something that I think has really, really helped me a lot. I used to do sitting meditation every day. I studied a lot about it. I read a lot of books. I tried a lot of different types, like tea. I tried transcendental meditation. I mostly just sit and I'm able to just kind of sink into a meditative state. And I just kind of let my thoughts come and let them go. And I think it was Pema Chodron that said, like, you're not trying to be thoughtless and have no thoughts whatsoever. You don't want to sit down and just be like, ugh, I'm failing because I'm thinking. And it's like, you're not trying to shoot your thoughts with a shotgun. She said the way to think about the thoughts is like you're using a feather to just brush away a bubble, like a balloon. Sorry, let's say a balloon or a bubble. So the thought comes up and you think that's a thought and you let it go. And initially it's going to be very difficult to sit. Your brain is like somebody who's fallen off a ship and is like can't swim and they're just clamoring for anything. So you're itchy, you're stiff, you've got other things to do. But the reality is, if you can sit there and get through those things, it'll take you maybe like 10 minutes. Maybe you start and you do a 5-minute session. 2 minutes you're gonna spend just trying to calm your mind when you're starting, and you may never even get there. But the better you get, the quicker you can get into that spot. So even just TM is really good because you just repeat your mantra, just sit there in a comfortable position, just mantra, 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 mantra. And actually, I connect very much with like chanting, and I would listen to chanting just on YouTube in the background, and I would just be listening to chanting. I had apps. A lot of the apps actually do have chanting in them. And I find that really gets my brain taken away from, like, really quickly. That's a real quick way for me to get real deep. And, so... What are they called? The beta waves? I can't think of them now. don't know if I have it. I don't have it on here. I had this one that had these like special thought waves, and I used one of the thought waves. I'm just gonna cut this out. I don't even know what I'm talking about. You know, a timer, you could download so many timers. Timer's very easy. Just do a timer, give yourself like 10 seconds to start, put on the ding, give yourself 5 minutes. Literally just sit, listen to your breath. Just listen, breath. Don't try to change it. Just breathe in, breathe out. Just try to be calm. That's it. It's gonna suck. You're gonna think you're bad at it. But the thing is, you can't get to being better at it if you don't just go through it. There's no real competition. People who are really competitive, they're like, oh, I've heard this before. You must be a better meditator than me. And I'm like, even if I was, it doesn't make any difference for you because I can't meditate for you. It's a tool that you will use to keep yourself calm and to keep your day objective, and so that you can kind of always zoom out and keep that perspective. And I feel like it has, you know, it's helped me recognize like when my shoulders are just clenched. You know, you probably walk around half the day going like this. And you're like, why do I have a headache? Well, you've been clenching your face and your neck for hours, and you've just been shallow breathing. So your body thinks you're panicking. And it'll just stop you to take that mindfulness. It's such like a buzzword these days, but the mindfulness is just being aware of what's going on in your brain, your body. And like, geez, once you do it for a while, like you start to notice stuff that like, hey, I'm getting mad and this is just a stupid thing to get mad at. And you're like, wow, it already paid off, right? So there's plenty of people that are way better at it than me. And, you know, look up any of the apps. Take your own journey. Again, Pema Chodron has been amazing. Jack Kornfield has been amazing. A lot of other people on a lot of the different apps. You can just look through them. Start anywhere. Literally just download a timer and try it out. I really recommend it. I don't think you have to get all weirdly spiritual about it. Just literally sit. I mean, it's just literally resetting your brain and clearing your desktop for the day. It really helps. I can't say that I do it every day now, but when I did do it, I feel like there's a lasting set of lessons you learn. And there's a lot of science behind it too, so I feel like I have a lot of it. I am trying to get back into a daily practice, but I'm just being very slow and easy on myself. You can't beat yourself into understanding it. So, you know, it's really helped me in a lot of ways. You know, being nicer to myself. Like, I've always been like a tyrant to myself, and that's not cool. So I still am a bit, but it helps me to recognize it. Rant of the day. So following that calm rant, following that calm meditation topic, I'll do my rant of the day. Warehouse workers are too dumb, okay? So this is something where people, and especially if they're coming from QuickBooks and they're not used to having an integrated system, nobody touches my QuickBooks. Nobody touches my QuickBooks, guys. Nobody. There, people are too dumb. They're just gonna ruin it. And it's like, why are you hiring warehouse workers that are so dumb that they can't even count? If you don't support them, it's like, yeah, I've seen some bad ones, but you know what's gonna make people be better? Enable them, give them the resources, give them the training, trust them. You know how you learn to trust somebody? You trust them, right? And I really think, hello? Why not give them some, we'll find out, I guess. I'm gonna try this because I don't really want to do the whole rest and then have it not. So why not give them a chance, develop them, and help them to become a more responsible and more organized person rather than making them write on a piece of paper, come to you like they're in trouble, and then you do the rest of it because you're so smart. You know, I think that's a mistake. And I personally like to push back against that. And, you know, it's something that I think you have to let go of, especially as you move to an ERP system. ERP system, you have to put controls in place, but people are going to touch the system and you have to get used to that. So it's kind of a small-minded thing to be restricting your warehouse workers. You could put validations in place. You can do additional training. You can give them additional tools. You can compliment them when they do a great job. You can help them with the tools they need, like pick lists that actually show where stuff is, or pick lists that are clear and easy to read. You can help them with easier methods of printing the stickers. You can help them with clear instructions in an organized warehouse. You can help them with a warehouse manager that can help manage new employees. You can help them with a training manual. You can help them with a lot of different things, even just encouraging them to talk to you. Don't waste human capital that way, okay, guys? And that's what I think bothers me the most. So I already covered meditation a little bit. I want to cover a little bit about why projects fail. And I get asked this every once in a while. And if I think back, honestly, I have a list here, but sometimes, like, when you're starting, like, everything looks like a failure in the middle and you start to just hyperventilate in the project and you think nothing's going to go right and you got all these issues that you have to get through and you have just this, that, and this, and that. And it goes back to anxiety being this ball of, you know, unidentifiable worries. That's, to me, what anxiety is. It's just a ball of unidentified worries. And if you start peeling back the onion, start writing down the problems and you're staying organized, then it's gonna look a lot less like garbage in the middle. And, you know, you'll be able to stay confident that things are on track and to keep people on track and to know when things are going off track. So that's kind of my first point there. Why it doesn't fail is like, a big one is managers and owners are not involved at all. Okay, you're not involved at all. This is what happens. It's your business. You're going to have to use it. And I think maybe it's just some embarrassment on the part of owners that they don't want to look foolish learning a new skill. And I think that's really stupid. You know, you learned a lot of stuff, you got to a specific place, and yeah, maybe you're so busy you can't even pay attention to your own business's brain. Or you don't want to look dumb, and maybe it's too boring for you. You're so above it, right? The people that get the most out of it are the ones that are truly involved. They're not guessing at what's going on. They're not, you know, just kind of involved. I know a lot of entrepreneurial people don't really like details, but you have to suffer through it. Or you have to have amazing managers who can handle and manage those processes. So the ones that have been the worst are ones where owners have just said, do this, but then there's no technical management whatsoever in there in order to kind of bring all the pieces together. So that always brings a project down. And it's very hard to get answers. You just end up, you know, when you go live, the owner hasn't been involved, so all they're hearing is complaining. And the complaining is, you know, the trusted people that would have cleared lines to the owner here are like, oh, SAP sucks and everybody hates it and this. And it's like, wow, why does it suck? Like, didn't you guys, did the consultants do a bad job or did they not get enough information? So that kind of brings me to the next one here. So scoping doesn't match the customer's expectations. You need to be very upfront about what the expectations are for those different areas. So you can't hide being like, oh, like I'm just gonna figure this out later. Like you have to bring up those, you have to be very transparent. And for me, it's like transparent to a fault. You need to say, this is like, they're like, oh, it does this and it does that. And you're like, kinda, no, this is why you need to be transparent. Like, no. look, it can't do this. It cannot, because customers come into this with a lot of expectations, and especially from a sales process, you don't know what the pre-sales and sales team said. I'm not saying that they made false claims, but you know, a customer will create their own reality. And if they create their own reality, you just need to make sure that what the actual reality is matches their reality, so you're on the same page, right? So if they were expecting this, that, and the other thing, and you aren't even delivering on the basic stuff, that will cause a project to totally fail. They'll be just really uninterested in it, and they won't want to continue. They'll see no value. And then I guess sometimes it's just not a good fit. Sometimes you get in there and it's just not a great fit. And are these all excuses? Now I'm thinking to myself, I really feel like a little bit this is kind of an excuse, because I think that consultants really can be the key pin here in keeping projects on track, setting expectations, being organized, scoping really well, communicating really well, and getting the owners involved, or at least making sure that people who are making the decisions are at the table and talking to you. So I think it was only my real early ones where I can really blame myself. I really tried, but I've learned a lot of lessons. You can look up my interview series and you can see more about what I had done. But I think a lot of these, unless it's a horribly, like unless there's a horrible gap in functionality that cannot be overcome by any means. I mean, again, a creative consultant, say you have B1 up, you can get through a lot of those things, but you have to do a good job at scoping. And that's part about experience too. You don't know what you don't know. So at the beginning, you're just taking in requirements and you're like, oh gosh, like I think I can do that. But then you say, oh, well, you realize later there's these massive gaps. When you're starting out new as a consultant, you are trying to make this perfect. You're trying to make this really perfect process, but maybe it's too perfect even for reality. I talked about compliance in the last episode. You need to have something that people are really going to use. And even if it's not what you in the system want, if they're not going to use it and they don't plan on using it, that's going to be real bad for you. You need to get buy-in from users in training. You need to get people excited about using the system. And even if they're not excited about a change, you need to show them something that's going to make their life easier so they buy in and want to use it. And if they have ownership in the testing process and the training process, during that process, they can say what they want. They'll better understand what they're going to be using, and then they will better buy into it when they need to use it, and they'll stick with it longer. Training is another thing. If you don't have enough training, people will just be like, I don't even know what to do. If you don't write up procedures at all, or even train people to procedures, you don't show them anything, that's going to be gigantic, because they'll have no clue what they want to do. They'll just start making their own stuff up, and pretty soon you have a giant mess. You haven't controlled for anything. And again, a lot of this comes with experience. So it's tough to do your own independent projects immediately. And I would say most of my horrifyingly bad implementations were really early, including my first one. Again, I talk about that in the interview series in a little bit more detail. So those are just some kind of random how projects can fail and how you can avoid it. I wanted to just end with a final quote. I really like this one. I think it's applicable these days. The line separating good and evil passes not through states, nor between classes, nor between political parties either, but right through every human heart. Alexander Solzhenitsyn. I think that's really cool, because people have combinations of, say, Democratic and Republican or liberal conservative in Canada. You have all parts of everything. And if you talk to somebody, you're going to really see who they are. And even if somebody doesn't agree with you, that doesn't mean you have to hate them. And it doesn't make them a horribly bad person, despite what people online want you to think. People, you can absolutely disagree with somebody and still love them. You can absolutely disagree and think somebody is not a great person and still like hang out with them. Maybe if they're not a bad person, but they can disagree with you. And as long as you can have a discussion about it, I think everything can be resolved. I just don't think that it's as horrible as you think when you're looking at stuff on the internet. It doesn't make sense. it doesn't make sense that you should hate somebody from another team and it's always me against you and we win because of this. And it's like, if a group of us loses, we all lose. And if you have to think back, like, think about what you don't agree with your parents. And think about how you've kind of reconciled that and you've stuck with them because your parents, I mean, some people can really get rid of their parents, but you know, you have differences from your parents and you hopefully when you get older, you work those out and you don't agree with them and see eye to eye with them and you have conversations with them and you're back and forth and they learn and you learn, but you can never say that you know everything and that you're 100% right, and they can't say they know everything and they're 100% right. And nobody can say that. So if you think you are so 100% right that you are unwilling to talk to anybody, you're wrong. You're the worst kind of wrong because you're so dumb that you think that. I change my mind all the time. I appreciate people that change their minds. And I make mistakes too. I've made lots of mistakes. I've learned from them, and that's why I am who I am. The first thing you teach kids is it's okay to make mistakes. So I don't know why we're trying to take that away now from everybody. Yeah, obviously some mistakes are harder to deal with and people need to pay a price. But at the same time, you've made mistakes too. Damn, look back in your history. And just because people haven't made those public and just because you're not a person in public, just because you don't have the guts to be in a public position, you have stuff probably you're not that proud of, but you've learned from it. And you know, maybe you did have to pay a price, and I'm not saying people that did crimes should just get away with it scot-free. That's not what I'm saying. But you need to forgive yourself too, and you need to have conversations with people you don't agree with more frequently, because those are actually interesting conversations. You can learn something, they can learn something, and chances are you're not going to walk away screaming at each other. Why don't you try to figure out where they're coming from? Wow, I guess that was rant number two. Check out my videos at youtube.battleshipcobra.com. I do videos weekly, 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, Mondays. And for my podcast, if you want, if you're listening to or if you're watching this in video format, you can get it in audio format on any of the platforms you want. So you got Apple Podcasts, you got the Google Podcasts, you got the Pocket Casts, you have Spotify, all those different places. You just go to podcast.battleshipcobra.com. You can listen to it there directly in audio format, or it'll point you to the different locations where you can download it. Really appreciate it. If you have any suggested topics, you can go to linkedin.battleshipcobra.com, add me, and then just make suggestions, add questions. Ask questions, suggest topics, and thank you guys so much. I really appreciate everything. See you next week.